The headlines: Iran's leader calls on the government to take necessary actions to neutralize the impact of sanctions on people's livelihood. Top military officials in Gabon announced they've seized power just days after the African country held the presidential and parliamentary elections. And a protest has been held in San Francisco to demand Google cancel cloud contract with the quote apartheid Israeli regime.
Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has asked the government of President Ebrahim Raisi to take necessary actions to mitigate the impact of Western sanctions on people's livelihoods. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei issued the call while meeting with cabinet ministers. He underlined that the sanctions on Iran are aimed at taking people's livelihoods hostage. The leader stressed that the most important way of neutralizing sanctions is to reduce inflation. He further said that anti-sanction measures should go hand-in-hand with negotiations on the country's nuclear issues. Ayatollah Khamenei called on the authorities to take decisions that could show growth in macroeconomic indicators while weighing their impacts on markets and inflation. A group of senior military officers in Gabon say they have seized power because the elections held in the country over the weekend were not credible.
On this day, August 30th, 2023, we, Defense and Security Forces, meeting within the Committee for the Transition and Restoration of Institutions on behalf of the Gabonese people and guarantor of the protection of institutions, have decided to defend peace by putting an end to the current regime. The general elections of August 26, as well as the truncated results, are cancelled. The borders are closed until further notice. All institutions of the Republic are dissolved.
The officers appearing on national television claimed they represent Gabon's security and defense forces. The move came shortly after the electoral body said President Ali Bongo Ondimba had won a third term in office. The government of the Central African nation has not commented on the coup yet. Gabonese people voted in presidential and parliamentary polls on Saturday. The transparency of the elections has been questioned due to lack of international observation, suspension of foreign broadcasts, and internet cuts. The opposition camp says the election was a, quote, fraud orchestrated by Ali Bongo and his supporters. The European Union has expressed concern over the developments in Gabon.
The news are confused. I got the news this morning early. If this is confirmed, it's another military coup, which increased instability in the whole region. I cannot say more because I don't have more information, but certainly is an issue that will be put on the table when we will discuss. Look, the whole area, starting with Central African Republic, then Mali, then Burkina Faso, now Niger, maybe Gabon, it's in a very difficult situation. And certainly the ministers, today defense ministers and tomorrow foreign affairs ministers, have to have a deep thought on what is going on there and how we can improve our policy with respect to these countries. This is a big issue for Europe.
The top EU diplomat said the 27-nation bloc is concerned about the impact of the military takeover in Gabon. Borrell was speaking on the sidelines of an informal meeting of EU defense and foreign ministers in Toledo, Spain. The meeting is dominated by discussions on the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war. The ministers will also discuss the bloc's response to developments in Niger and Gabon. News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, a rights advocacy group says Israeli forces have detained over 5,000 Palestinians across the occupied West Bank since the beginning of 2023, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Club. Israeli forces arrested 200 Palestinians in the West Bank during the current week alone. Palestinian media say the detainees include 32 women and 180 children, as well as 700 sick inmates. A total of 1,200 Palestinian prisoners are currently kept under Israel's so-called administrative detention policy. It allows the regime to detain prisoners for indefinite periods of time without any charge or trial. Israel's oppression of Palestinians has seen a sharp rise under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist coalition cabinet, which is composed of far-right parties. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have political analyst Barry Grossman joining us from Bali, Indonesia. Also, we have Palestinian political activist Moti Abu Musabbeh joining us from Gaza City. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Grossman in Bali. This rights advocacy group has revealed that in continuation of the increased Israeli aggression against Palestinians, Israeli forces have now detained over 5,000 Palestinians since the beginning of 2023. Talk to us about the situation that the Palestinians are facing in Israeli jails, the illegality of this draconian policy of holding Palestinians without charge or trial, and also about the international silence in this regard.
This is happening in that part of historic Palestine that remains under Palestinian rule. And it seems to be a throwback, really, to the Accords, which ceded some considerable measure of control to the occupiers when it comes to security in the West Bank. But let's be perfectly clear about this. Certainly, under international law, which includes the Geneva Conventions and other international treaties. This random arrest and detention of individuals, especially and specifically without a trial, is considered not only unlawful, but a war crime. Of course, the answer that I would expect we would hear from the occupation is that these actions are being carried out legally, that is, in accordance with laws passed in the occupied territories, but those laws themselves violate international law. And it's worth pointing out that certainly in the Rome Statute that gives the ICC its jurisdiction, there's an obligation on the part of all contracting parties to pass legislation to ensure that the rights that people have under the Geneva Conventions are respected, and to take action to suppress any violations of people's rights to be protected in accordance with those rights mentioned in the Geneva Convention. So by any measure, the entire policy is unlawful. It's a crime, a war crime. It's arguably a crime against humanity, if looked at in its proper context. And the great tragedy is, of course, is that the rest of the world closes its eyes to it, leaving Palestinians with very little choice, having tried everything else, including unilaterally abandoning policies which were described in the past by the occupation as terrorism. And thereby reducing the incidence of lethal attacks on Israelis by 95% over a more than 10-year period, having tried everything else and failed to achieve any progress. They have very little choice but to engage in armed resistance, which, of course, is their right as an occupied people.
Moti Abu Musabbeh, give us your observation on the issue. The increased Israeli aggression against Palestinians since the start of the year, the issue of Palestinian prisoners and the inhumane conditions that they're facing, and also tell us about the international silence with regards not just to the issue of Palestinian prisoners, but also overall day-to-day Israeli rights violations that are being carried out against Palestinians. The international community has been silent with regards to that as well.
Okay, first of all, thanks for having me. To me, it's an undeniable fact that the suffering of the Palestinian prisoners inside the Israeli jails has been always as a dark side of the suffering of the Palestinians' life under the ongoing Israeli occupation and under the ongoing Israeli brutality. When we are talking about having more than 5,000 Palestinians inside the Israeli jails since the beginning of this year, in addition to having more than 1,200 Palestinians under the so-called administrative detention, we are talking about a flagrant violation of Palestinian basic human rights and the flagrant violation of all human rights legislations and norms. This actually represents a practical translation of the current behavior and attitude that this Israeli hardline government has against the Palestinian people as a whole. And I do believe that this actually reflects the racist attitude that this government actually has against the Palestinian people. But on the other hand, it's worth mentioning that these racist acts and measures taken against the Palestinian prisoners inside the Israeli jails are not taking place far away from the current measures taken by the Israeli government regarding confiscating the Palestinians' lands in the Nakab and in the West Bank, and the Judaizing campaigns that targeting, which are targeting the Palestinian people in Jerusalem. So we are talking about a comprehensive campaign taken by the Israeli occupation, and it seems that as if the Israeli current government races counter the clock in order to entrench the Israeli occupation and in order to make sure that the Palestinian people are still living under the pressure and subjugated to the pressure under the Israeli occupation forces. So we are talking about an unprecedented campaign taken and taken by the Israeli occupation against the Palestinian people. And this actually, on the other hand, represents a disgrace for the international community and all international human rights organization, as they are still watching what is going on, and they are actually witnessing these racist attacks and these racist acts and measures taken against the Palestinian people without moving any, without having any stance, without taking any step, practical step, I mean, in order to stop these practices and these assaults against the Palestinian people. So the spontaneous question here is, where is the role of those international human rights organizations? Where is the role of the international community in front of all these racist attitudes that clearly violates Palestinians' basic human rights and go against the international legislations and international law? And no one can deny that these attacks and these numbers regarding the Palestinian people who are subjugated to different kinds of assaults and different kind of torture inside the Israeli jails, this actually has risen with having this hardline government in authority. What should we expect from having such a racist a criminal like Ben-Gvir in authority, and he has the power to have the measures against the Palestinian people? This is the normal result of having this government and authority, and the international community should have a decisive stance in order to protect the Palestinian people and to stop this kind of unprecedented attacks and assaults against the Palestinian people.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Barry Rossman, political analyst, joining us from Bali, Indonesia, and Moti Abu Musab, a Palestinian political activist, joining us from Gaza. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. But stick around, there's plenty more to come here on. Welcome back. Anti-Israel activists are demanding the American multinational technology from Google cancel its cloud contract with the Israeli regime.
We are here representing the No Tech for Apartheid campaign. We're a coalition of Google workers and community members who have coalesced to send a strong message to the company that Google workers are refusing to allow their labor to be used to power apartheid violence against Palestinian people.
The protesters, mostly members of No Tech for Apartheid campaign, gathered outside the Google Cloud Next conference in San Francisco to make their voices heard. They denounced the company's Project Nimbus. It provides cloud services to the Israeli regime and its military. The protesters argued that the cloud technology developed by Google is being used against Palestinians, including for surveillance and racial segregation. Amazon Web Services is also part of the multi-year project signed in 2021. Google has not responded to a request for comment yet, but activists say they have more reasons than ever to push tech companies like Google. They cannot continue profiting by empowering Israeli apartheid. After years of discussions and debates, Australia has confirmed the date for a historic referendum on recognizing the rights of the country's indigenous population.
The idea for a voice came from the people, and it will be decided by the people. Today I announce that referendum day will be the 14th of October.
The Premier made the announcement at a rally in Adelaide, describing the referendum as a once-in-a-generation chance to unite the nation, encouraging a yes vote. Albanese cited opinion polls indicating that over 80% of the country's indigenous population intended to support the measure. The voters will be asked whether they support an alteration to the constitution that establishes an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voice. For it to succeed, a majority of Australians need to vote yes. There also needs to be majority support in at least four of the country's six states. Australia's indigenous people make up about 3.2% of its population. They have faced injustices since European colonization. And China has warned that U.S. moves to politicize trade issues would have disastrous consequences for the global economy. Chinese Prime Minister Li Qiang made the remarks in a meeting with a visiting U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo. Li said politicizing economic and trade issues will seriously affect bilateral relations and mutual trust. He added that such moves will also undermine the interests of the two countries' enterprises and people. Raimondo, for her part, said the U.S. is not seeking to decouple its economy from China's while calling for strengthening cooperation between the two countries. Relations between Beijing and Washington have plummeted to their lowest levels in decades, with U.S. trade curbs topping the list of disagreements. The U.S. claims that the trade curbs are necessary for its national security, while China says they are meant to clip its economic rise. For more on that story, we're joined by President of the Asia Institute, Mr. Emmanuel Pastrich, joining us from Seoul. Sir, welcome to the program. China has warned the U.S. Not to politicize trade issues, and were that to happen, it would have disastrous consequences for the global economy. Walk us through those consequences, please.
Well, the consequences we already see, and that is a breakdown of this integrated approach to manufacturing, in which through complex supply chain and distribution, different parts of, say, a cell phone were manufactured in different countries, especially focused on Taiwan, China, but also Southeast Asia and the United States. And as that breaks down, there's a serious risk that you will not be able to manufacture even basic items. And this could happen, this sort of a collapse of a supply chain and also a financing of factories could happen very rapidly. It's quite a serious risk. The United States has undergone a radical ideological shift over the last 2 years. It went from promoting free trade as a solution to everything to promoting a national security-driven economic model, which is linked to the militarization of the American economy.
Thanks a lot, Emmanuel Pastor, joining us from Seoul.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bazaar.
Historically, humans lived a colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle. But what brought humans into the valleys and grasslands, and later into a collective society? Some argue wheat domesticated mankind, settling humans permanently next to their fields. Humans have come a long way from traditional farming. Presently, some 38% of the Earth's surface is used to cultivate crops. Technology has revolutionized agricultural production, leading to more food security worldwide.
Oh, hello there. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar. This time we will explore the agriculture industry. We shine the spotlight on the marriage between technology and science for high-yield agricultural productions. We wanted to see how the agricultural sector is developing new ways to increase the efficiency of natural resource use while also elevating the quality of cultivated food. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's walk through the fields of today's bazaar.
Our quest for answers led us to a company in Khorasan Razavi province that specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechi, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini tubers. So what is a mini tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a soilless system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received 3 consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress.
36 نفر از پرسنل ما دارای مدرک تحصیلی بالای کارشناسی ارشد هستند و اینها خیلی کمک ما میکنند در پویایی این مجموعه. به همین ترتیب تمام مجموعه ها افرادی رو از ابتدا شروع کرده تربیت کردن و تحصیل کردن در این مورد و تک تک افراد از ابتدا روی رشته‌های خاص خودشون کار می‌کردن. از قبل از دیپلمشون برای این کار تأیید شده بودن و تونستن دوره دکتراشون رو در رشته‌ای بگیرن که مورد نظر مجموعه بوده و موضوع گزارششون رو مجموعه براشون تعیین کرده که این گزارش رو این رشته رو بخونن.
As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs 1/5 of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion, meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future.
It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
In case you didn't know, and most don't actually, the country is home to more than 7% of global mineral reserves. That's significant. With over 80 different types of minerals, Iran is one of the top 10 mineral-rich countries globally. In total, the country has about 60 billion tons of proven mineral reserves, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world.
The mining ministry says the total production value in this sector is over $700 billion. This value has not been unnoticed by the government, which has been seriously pursuing several programs promoting the mining sector. Despite its enormous riches, Iran has yet to unlock its full potential as this key sector is still struggling to operate at full capacity. There are several reasons for this. One is a lack of necessary machinery and equipment for expanding this industry. So the government is focusing on geological exploration, extraction, and research of new products as part of areas for development. Another one of the government's programs to increase production is to increase mineral extraction. So organizations have embarked on reviving idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country, around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy that over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idle mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector.
Mining in Iran has more work to be done, and it's still under development. Still, there are plenty of doers in this country and plenty more waiting for further investment opportunities. Iran's productions by far outweigh its domestic use, leaving lots of room for mineral exports. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact.
Figures from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show a record high of nearly $12 billion worth of minerals and mining products were exported last year. This means there was roughly an 80% increase in exports year on year. Championing the export list in terms of value were steel ingots and related products, copper, aluminium, zinc, and iron. This is a pretty big growth spurt, actually. But government officials say export figures could be much higher if raw materials and other mining products could be further developed with added value. So, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized products in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. The current Iranian calendar year slogan was knowledge-based production and job creation. The title was given by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The goal is to promote and increase support for companies that engineer and produce advanced products that contribute to the economy.
Well, it's that time of the show where I should step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague is actually out there on the field. So, let's see that report.
In the modern world today, both industrialized and developing countries have modern installations capable of highly efficient fabric production. In addition to mechanical improvements in yarn and fabric manufacture, there have been rapid advances in the development of new fibers, processes to improve textile characteristics, and testing methods allowing greater quality control. Today, we visited Aram Takmil Tefe Faro's company, active in the textile industry in Iran. In this company, there are various activities such as processes of weaving, dyeing and finishing, and printing of different types of textiles while employing the strongest technical staff as well as modern European dyeing and finishing machines to finally meet customer satisfaction with quality products and innovations. Iran's textile industry has a capacity to produce a wide variety of products suitable for different market segments, both within Iran and across the world. Over the past years, close to 30,000 tons of different types of textile were imported. Presently, however, there are 78 textile factories active in the country, producing 90 million square meters of different kinds of fabric every year. Iran's Development Plan Vision 2025 has identified textile and clothing as one of the potential industries for expansion. The plan basically emphasizes on the need for technological advancements and improvement in productivity.
Many thanks for that awesome adventure, as always. Well, that brings us to the end of this edition. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you soon.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين brothers, sisters, listeners السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome again to the program keys of life, mafatihul hayat. One of the keys of life is parents. We have to be nice to them. We have to be kind to them. We have to make sure we don't hurt them. We don't annoy them. We don't make them upset. We spoke about all of this in the past. Now, one of the things that we need to do for our parents, on top of the fact being nice to them, we need to pray for them. We need to supplicate to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for our parents. We need to constantly ask Allah to give them health, to give them wealth, to avoid harm from them, and everything in between. Give them long life. And if they are dead or they're passed away, we need to also even pray even more for them, because they are more in need of our dua when they are dead than them being alive. Because once they are alive, they can take care of themselves. But when they're dead, they can't do much. So we need to pray to them. Imam Zain al-Abidin, salamullahi alayh, he has a beautiful dua when it comes to praying for his parents. Now, obviously, I can't read the entire dua for you, but I'll try to highlight some of the things that the Imam alayhi as-salam says. So the Imam says, after he begins with salawat, he says, وَأَخْصَصُ اللَّهُمَّ وَالِدَيَّ بِالْكَرَامَةِ لَدَيْكَ. Oh Allah, when it comes to my parents, make them honored in your sight. That's one. وَالصَّلَاةِ مِنْكَ. Oh Allah, have your praise, have your forgiveness on my parents, Ya Arhamar Rahimeen. And then the Imam alayhi salam says, he goes to continue and he says, Allahumma ij'alni ahabuhuma haybatal sultanil asuf. Oh Allah, when it comes to my parents, and this is a very important concept that requires in-depth analysis, he says, make me fear them the same way I fear an oppressive tyrant. Why? Why would the Imam ask Allah for such a thing? Because, you know, when there's an oppressive tyrant, every move you make, you will think it through. You will not do it until you think it through. And you will constantly aware of it. Because, like, what if I do this and I get punished and I get killed, I get executed? Because the person, the ruler, is oppressive. So if you have that kind of mentality, you will never do wrong by that oppressive ruler. So if you have that kind of mentality when it comes to your parents, you will never be able to do wrong with them. Okay? And he says, وَأَبَرُّهُمَا بِرُّ الْأُمَّ الرَّؤُوفِ. When it comes to taking care of them, give me the ability and the mercy that the mother have towards her children, because that mercy is the highest level of mercy that exists on the face of earth. There is no mercy on earth or in this world as much as the mother's mercy. He says, give me that mercy and that fear. So do you see the balance here that Imam is trying to keep? He's trying to keep their position in terms of when he looks at how he treats with them, like how he deals with them, and also how he becomes nice to them. So there's fear, and at the same time, there's mercy. Absolutely beautiful. Let us take a short break, and then we will come back. Don't go anywhere.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafati, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree,
امام همونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دیگه، اون امامشو گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره، همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat. So in the dua of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, when it comes to his parents, and he says, وَاجْعَلْ طَاعَتِي لِوَالِدَيْ وَبِرِّي بِهِمَا. Make my obedience to my parents. وَبِرِّي بِهِمَا. And all my kindness, all my compassion, everything I have, make it go towards them. So sometimes we become obedient to the wrong people in our lives. We become obedient to our friends. We become obedient to our bosses. We become obedient to even our spouses. But when it comes to our parents, we're not obedient at all because they're our parents. The Imam says, no. Ta'a, obedience, it is only for parents. And birr, being nice and gentle and compassionate, not to your friends, not to your boss, not to people around you, not to your spouse. It needs to be done first and foremost to your parents. So, yeah, you can be obedient, you can be kind to other people, but your parents are number one priority. And then the Imam alayhi salamullah says, this kind of ta'a, aqarru li'ayni, is more beloved, pleasing in my eye, min raqdatil wasnan, wa athlaju lisadri min sharbatil dham'an. Make this like, in a way where it is the best in my eyes than the person who sleeps on a very comfortable pillow, and make it like opens my chest and, you know, have that feeling in my heart more than a thirsty person when he drinks cold water after like a thirst, like extreme thirst, and in the heat of the day. And then the Imam says, okay, I do understand that there's nothing I can do, like, or at least there's nothing much I can do to actually give them their due right. So what I can do is ask Allah in return, because Allah can. It says, Allahumma ishkur lahuma tarbiyati. Oh Allah, my shukr, my thanking is not going to do them any good. However, you, oh Allah, I'm asking you to please thank them on my behalf for tarbiyati, for upbringing me. وَأَثِبْهُمَا عَلَى تَكْرِيمَتِي. And when it comes to them and taking care of me and raising me up and making me a good person, you, O Allah, give them their reward. وَحْفَظْ لَهُمَا مَا حَفَظَاهُ مِنِّي فِي صَغْرِي. And protect them in the same way they protected me in my childhood. So the Imam, after saying, you know, asking Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to make him obedient and nice and kind, when it comes to giving back to the parents, he did realize that there is nothing he can do to repay his parents, which is me and you. There's nothing we can do to repay our parents. There's no gold, there's no diamonds, there's nothing valuable that I can give them in return to make up for what they did to me. I can't, you can't, no one can. Only Allah can. And when an infallible ma'soom says this, then obviously we submit here too. Obviously we can't. Oh Allah, you do the shukr. Oh Allah, you do the reward. Oh Allah, you do the protection. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams.
hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.